When the Army dropped a waste removal contractor for a base in Louisiana, it didn't plan on a protest from a company of Dripping Springs, Texas. But the incumbent contractor, located in that gateway to Hill Country, did in fact protest the new award, which went to the government of the parish in which Fort Polk is located. For the curious issues here, we turn to procurement attorney Joe Petrillo of Petrillo and Powell. And so, Joe, this one is kind of an interesting case. Now, let me see if I can summarize it. The Army had a contract with a company in Texas. They dropped that company, hired the local parish to do their trash removal, and got a protest. What happened here?
That's exactly what happened. This is a situation where GAO hadn't really addressed the issue before. There's a special statute that authorizes the Defense Department to get installation support services from state or local government governments on a sole source basis. And what had happened at Fort Polk was that Red River had the waste removal contract, and Army decided that it would go ahead and instead of using Red River or competing for a new contract, they would do a sole source with Vernon Parish, which was their local governmental organization down there. And they did. They did a sole source deal with Vernon Parish. Red River heard about it and thought that it didn't meet the statute. The statute has a few requirements. One is that the service that's being provided must be one that the local state government is already providing. So they already pick up trash for the folks in Vernon Parish, and they're now expanding that to increase bring in Fort Polk. The protester thought that this was a different kind of trash removal, and he noted some differences. And there was also a question about whether or not the Vernon Parish was competing its trash removal contract competitively, which is another requirement of the statute.
So it wasn't Vernon Parish employees doing the trash pickup, but a contractor to the parish?
Apparently not. For reasons I'll explain, there wasn't a great deal of detail about what was going on with this contract and transaction in the GAO decision. Because GAO had to first get over the hurdle of, is this even something they can consider in a bid protest? Their bid protest authority is limited to procurement contracts. So if you have a deal done under other transaction authority or cooperative agreement, GAO won't hear that in the bid protest forum. And they had to figure out which category this intergovernmental support agreement fit. And after analyzing the statute, they concluded that it was a procurement contract. And they did that in part because the beginning of the statute exempts these agreements from procurement statutes. GAO felt that there would be no need to exempt it from the ordinary procurement statute if this wasn't a form of procurement contract. So now we have a new category of agreements that are subject to GAO protest.
I guess this is mainly an issue for the military because they exist within local jurisdictions on their bases, camps, and posts.
That's right. I mean, the statute says, makes the obvious point that, the goal here is to enhance effectiveness or create efficiencies or economies of scale. So the idea is if the state or local government's already performing the service, adding in the base could have great cost-saving advantages, et cetera. And that's what they're aiming at here.
We're speaking with Joe Petrillo, a procurement attorney at Petrillo and Powell. So what did GAO decide ultimately in this case, and why?
Well, ultimately, they decided the protest had been filed too late. They have a 10-day time limit for most protest issues. And the protester came in on the 11th day, and that was one day too late. So they didn't hear the protest on whether or not this was the same kind of collection activity. And then the question of whether or not Vernon Parish was going to use a competitive procurement to get its trash collection contract, that issue is one that deals with how the contract is actually administered. And GAO won't decide those as part of its bid protest process. So ultimately, the protest failed, but GAO did decide that they did have authority to hear protests of this type of agreement.
So what is the lesson for military installations that want to obtain, say, I guess, possibly utilities, trash collection, water, whatever else local governments tend to provide? What's the lesson for them in awarding these contracts?
Well, the lesson is that they need to make sure that they observe the limitations of the statute, which aren't considerable, but they're there, and that they need to look at the arrangement with the state or local government, parse the statute, and make sure it meets the requirements, because if not, they could be subject to a bid protest.
I guess in the larger sense, it behooves DOD, if they do it correctly, to use these local entities because they help with the revenue that many parishes and cities and towns and counties could use from the otherwise tax-exempt federal properties.
That's right. I mean, it can help the local economy. It could be beneficial to DOD if there are economies of scale that are realized. So, you know, there are a lot of advantages here. And it isn't necessary, it seems, under the statute to make a determination that you realize those advantages, but you do have to live within the limits of the statute.
And there's another case that I wanted to ask you about, and that is in the case of where a government entity had a contract with a company but did not guarantee any work or any revenue under that contract.
Right. This is the decision of the Civilian Board of Contract Appeals in ASW Associates. And, you know, it illustrates a trend that I've certainly seen over the years of the government deciding it's going to push more and more risk onto the contractor. And as long as contractors are willing to accept the risk and bid on the contracts, that can work. In this instance, it was a contract that was for remediation of lead-contaminated soil at Superfund sites. And the contract described itself as an indefinite delivery contract. It did not guarantee any specific amount of work to the government, to the contractor, rather. It did not say that the contractor would perform all of the requirements in a particular geographic site. It didn't order any particular number of units or minimum. It didn't even have a minimum quantity. And the contractor came in with a claim that the estimated quantities had been misevaluated or, you know, some other problem like that. And the board had to figure out, well, what kind of contract is this? And it came to the conclusion that, you know, it wasn't a definite quantity contract. It wasn't even a requirements contract because it didn't guarantee a certain amount of requirements or a certain type of requirements for the contractor. A certain class of work, none of that. And it wasn't even an indefinite quantity contract, which is what the contract said it was, because it lacked the minimum quantity of guaranteed work. And the regulations and the law involving contracts is pretty clear that to have a binding agreement, you need to have at least some guaranteed minimum amount of work.
In this case, the lesson is for contractors to make sure they include a minimum anyway before they sign a contract with the government, or they could end up with a lot of paperwork exercising and nothing.
Right. So, you know, under those circumstances, if you get this type of a contract, it's only valid and binding for the amount of work that the order that the agency actually orders and the contractor actually provides. You know, for that amount of work, the contract is valid and binding, but for no other purpose. So you're really getting not much of a contract at all.
Joe Petrillo is a procurement attorney with Petrillo and Powell in Washington. As always, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.